Bonjour et bienvenue à cette balado qui traite exclusivement d'éducation, de pédagogie et de didactique.
Je m'appelle Marc-André Girard. Bienvenue au rendez-vous pédagogique de l'École branchée. Alors, bonjour Todd Taylor.
Salut Marc, ça va?
Ça va bien, merci. J'ai rencontré M. Todd Taylor, qui est conseiller pédagogique en Ontario, dans la commission scolaire de York Region, et on a plusieurs questions à lui poser. Et puis, pour ce faire, malheureusement, Todd va nous parler en anglais, parce que son français est quand même un petit peu loin. So Todd, can you tell us about your career path a bit?
Sure, Mark. I started out, I guess, as a teacher. I graduated from McGill in early 2000 and immediately got hired back on as a teacher in York Region, just north of Toronto, and spent 15 years in the classroom in a variety of roles. I was department head. I had leadership opportunities within our school. I also had the experience to go overseas and teach in England for a year, and then I also taught in Hong Kong for two summers. For the last 3 years, I've been what we call a digital literacy resource teacher, which means I support 8 public high schools in York Region, and about 1,000 teachers in those schools, hoping to get them to use technology more effectively in their practice. Part and parcel of that is also I've been very involved in having assessment discussions and making sure that teachers are moving their assessment away from sort of what we would think of as traditional assessments into assessments that engage students and really allow our students to demonstrate their true understanding of a topic.
Okay, super. Le but de notre rencontre, c'est de voir ensemble à quel point est-ce que l'Ontario est vraiment un modèle en éducation, et parce qu'au Québec, on réfère souvent à l'Ontario comme étant justement un exemple à suivre. Donc, j'ai différentes questions à propos de différents points à poser à M. Taylor, et puis on va pouvoir comparer ensemble, avoir son opinion de l'interne, parce que Todd connaît aussi le système éducatif québécois. So Todd, the first question is, you talked about it, you talked about department heads. Donc, c'est des chefs de département. What are department heads?
That's a really interesting question. If you read our collective agreement, the department head is responsible for delivering academic programming within a certain subject. So it could be English or math or science or French or languages, whatever you want. The role of department head has changed, though, in the last 15 years, and it's really through a result of government decisions to limit professional release time for department heads. They've gone from being classroom leaders to really just being able to sort of manage departments at a very superficial level. So making sure that staff have supplies and they're aware of new initiatives. But the ability for them to go in and co-teach and co-plan has been severely restricted by that. So the department head is responsible at the end of the day for making sure that the content that is delivered in all of their courses within their department meets ministry expectations and policies regarding assessment and evaluation.
Okay, and comment est-ce qu'ils sont choisis? How are they picked?
So historically, it was you had to have what we call an honor specialist in a course. So you could go to postgraduate work, you'd go to a faculty of education and get your honors specialist in English, if you were an English major, let's say. And that would qualify you to become a department head. That process is still the same, but in our board, we've just recently changed the process in that historically the incumbent, the person who's had that job, was able to be a department head pretty much for life. It was a 4-year renewable term, but the understanding was that the position was going to go to the incumbent. And so we saw that people would see the vacancy list would come out with all the different postings, and next to it would say incumbent applying. And that was almost code for don't bother to apply because it's going to go to the person who's had the job before. Earlier this year, our board identified ways to try and push the system and really push some of the thinking and learning for our teachers, and decided to remove that incumbent will apply clause. And now you see positions being posted, and it's a bit more of a competition because there is the ability, or at least the perception, that anyone can go for these positions. And you're seeing people apply who may not have historically applied before under the fear that they weren't going to get the job. It's created some resentment in our board. There are some certain department heads who are, you know, feeling that this has been my job for 25 years and I know it best. But we're also seeing some school administrators who are having those courageous conversations and making those decisions to not rehire the incumbent, to look and realize what's going to be best and what fits my school's needs the most, and addressing that in their hiring practices.
Okay. Do you need to be a department head to become a principal?
It's beneficial. It's not required. I've just recently gone through the vice principal selection process in York Region and thankfully have been successful. And it helped.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. It helped that I had department head experience. I've been department head of history, geography, and ESL. But I think more so was the idea that I also have regional experience in this new job. So it's not automatic. But again, administration, they do want to see that you've been leading. Whether that's informally within your school, formally through a leadership role, or even maybe at the board level or provincially, they want to see that leadership. So if you're just a classroom teacher, you probably aren't going to have much luck becoming a department head.
You're talking about leadership. How important is leadership in Ontario in school or board? And most likely, how do we see it? How do we see the importance of leadership in the educational program in Ontario?
So it's really interesting about leadership. I think some of the research coming out of different faculties, there's the book by Dan Tapscott called Grown Up Digital, really talk about how our students are different even from 5 years ago. And I think when you think back to 17 years ago when I started my career, there's a huge shift in the way students are learning, interacting, and just sort of living day to day. As a result, we need to make sure that our system is reactive to that, that it does, even proactive, that we want to make sure that we are engaging in best practices that really support our students at any level. And that's where leadership comes in. I've seen great pockets of innovation where teachers are doing fantastic things with students. And you just look at how empowering it is, how engaged students are. And that's where you really start to see the payoff for leadership, because leadership is great in that if you can motivate some people to do things, that's one thing. But if you can get a whole school behind your initiatives, that's where it's going to have the most impact. And I think we've got some real systems in place that we're starting to see sort of school-wide leadership initiatives where people are coming with ideas and being okay with the idea to fail fast, that they'll try something, and if it works, it works, and if it doesn't, it doesn't. But at the end of the day, at least they've had the opportunity and they can reflect on it and go, oh, that's something maybe we need to change. Or maybe there's one element of that that I can take and apply to the rest of my practice.
Okay, we were talking earlier of the record about authentic assessment. Can you explain us what it is exactly? On parle d'évaluation authentique en français.
So it ties in with sort of the idea of appreciating that every student is different. And one of my sort of go-to sayings is that if you're asking a question that's Googleable, why are you asking it? If a student can literally type it into Google and get the answer, then that's not a question you should be asking, because they will always have Google, right? So let's think about building skills that they need, critical thinking, collaboration. How are we structuring our assessment profiles to foster those skills? And I think authentic assessment really sort of brings in a couple of different threads. One of them is the fact that we let student voice drive that assessment. Instead of the teacher saying, I want you to write a 500-word essay on Romeo and Juliet, let's talk about other ways that students can demonstrate that knowledge. And if you start to unpack that and allow students to demonstrate their learning to you in different ways, the results are surprising. You'll find kids who will pour hours and hours into doing, let's say, a blog between the Capulets and the Montagues, as opposed to structure, you know, really struggling to write a 500-word essay. So it's allowing that differentiation piece. I think the other piece that's really important is that students can make a connection between what they're learning in the classroom and how it impacts on their real life. And an example I gave is in grade 12 law, we look at environmental law. That comes after our criminal law unit. So criminal law, the kids are all excited. It's about murders and courthouses and fantastic things. Environmental law can be pretty dry. And so I asked the students to sort of brainstorm some environmental issues around our school. And one of them is a former University of Toronto observatory that's useless now because the city's growing up around it. It's not dark enough. And the plan was to turn this, what was really a quasi-park, into housing subdivisions. And the people were so upset and the students got so involved because they could see a direct connection between what we were learning in school about environmental law and those protections and their day-to-day life. And the students went out. They had letters from our premier, the mayor. They had all sorts of great firsthand research that they brought back into the classroom, and they were authentically motivated to do this work. As a teacher, I got to take a step back. I didn't have to say, where's your homework? The other students were keeping each other up to task. So the idea that students, A, have voice, and B, that they also have choice, and they can see what they're learning, what's the direct connection to what's going on in their lives.
By opposition to what in Quebec that you have experienced or learned from, because I know you have friends and people you know in the Quebec education system.
I don't think it's just Quebec. I think there, and even in Ontario, we have pockets where people look at assignments and go, this is what I'm going to do because I've been doing it for 35 years, right? I've given this assignment 100 times before. And we have an originality program that we can use to check how original students' work is. And it's really interesting to note that students will swap papers with friends in other schools. And there'd be no way for a teacher to know that. But now with technology, when it goes through the system, it flags as something that's come in before. So we need to make sure that we're giving students tasks that engage them and can't be copied. And I think in, and again, not Quebec, not Ontario, but just anywhere, you get people who are not necessarily moving forward with it. It's the same thing year after year, and it certainly isn't set up in a way to encourage students to move forward.
One thing I learned from the York Region School Board is modern learning. Can you explain me exactly what it is? De l'apprentissage moderne.
Sure. We have three board foci, math, mental health, and modern learning. Modern learning is one that ties most directly to my job. And again, it's that idea that we have to make sure that the product we're offering is what the students are connecting with, that they are future ready. They're walking out of our doors. We know that, you know, a percentage of jobs in the future aren't here yet. So how can we train students for jobs that don't exist? Well, we have to give them those skills. So talking about critical thinking, collaboration, and really fostering that and making a move. And I think part of that modern learning is pulling in different pedagogical practices, pulling in different resources, and really making it respective of the learner and who they are, playing to their strengths and differentiating so that maybe in a class of 30 students, we're not looking at the same assignment for everybody, that we give enough structure, there's enough flexibility in our structure to make sure that all students can succeed.
Okay, and one last question I will ask you. Well, not the last one, but a second last one, I should say. We're talking about effective feedback. We are starting here in Quebec to know a little more about feedback, how important it is. Research on feedback, you know, Hattie has been recently very, very popular, I should say, here in Quebec. So most teachers know who he is, and most importantly about his researches and meta-analysis. How is feedback important in Ontario?
I think it's really, and this is even learning in Ontario that's been new, but we've really seen a fundamental change in the way education is delivered in Ontario over the past 10 years. And a big chunk of that has to do with feedback. There's really, and the research will bear this out, that there's not a lot of reason to give kids the feedback at the end. And again, thinking back to an essay, let's say, or a lab report, spending all that time as a teacher to give them all the feedback at the end of the learning cycle doesn't help the product any better. And I use the analogy of if you were baking something in the kitchen and, you know, somebody saw you and you were going to use a cup of sugar as opposed to a tablespoon of sugar. And somebody stopped you at that point and said, oh, that's not right. You want to fix that now. And look at what the final product would be, as opposed to waiting to the end and saying, oh, you used too much sugar. Right? So it's much better. Feedback needs to happen early on in the learning cycle so that students have a chance to internalize it and demonstrate it to you. It also needs to be really laser-like focused. So it shouldn't be everything. Like, you're probably going to go through, if you went through a lab report with a fine-tooth comb, you'd probably find lots of errors. But let's focus on the big ones. Where's the bang for the buck? If we want students to learn something, what's going to be most beneficial to them? Where are we going to get that payoff later down in terms of feedback? And I think feedback can be from the teacher, but it can also be self-feedback. So students give them a structure to examine their own work and do that. But also peer feedback is really important because when a student is forced to assess their peers, not only are they assessing their colleagues or their friends in class, but they're also looking back on their own and going, okay, well, maybe I should change this. This was a problem with so-and-so's paper, and now it's a problem with mine. So if we can really bring feedback into the learning cycle and not have it at the end, that's where it's most effective.
Last question, probably the toughest one. Like we say in French, la question qui tue. Is Ontario really a model for education in the country or maybe North America?
I'm going to have to say yes, because we've seen our scores, international scores on the PISA and those types of evaluations. We're up there. You know, we sit sort of with Singapore and, you know, some of those really jurisdictions that are held up in high self-esteem. But it's been a while to get there. And our last premier, Dalton McGuinty, you know, took credit for, we called it the revolution. It was almost like a quiet revolution, to steal a term from Quebec, in that we really fundamentally changed the way teachers actually assess. And there was some kickback. For example, you can't dock a student for late marks in Ontario anymore. It's actually against the law. It's in the Ed Act. Students have the opportunity for multiple submissions. But we've actually seen that pay off in terms of the learning. So yeah, do I think Ontario is a model? Absolutely. Do I think that this is applied Ontario-wide and evenly? No, absolutely not. But it is something that we're definitely moving towards. And we do have to just understand that students have a choice with education. And it's a little bit different in Ontario in terms of how schools are funded. But if they don't like school in a public school in Ontario, there's nothing stopping them from going to a Catholic high school. Or in Quebec, you know, you could send your child to a private school. So we've got to realize that we are in competition for students, and we need to make sure that we're offering them something that is actually going to benefit them later in life.
Well, thank you very much. That was very, very interesting. Merci, Monsieur Taylor.
Thank you, as always, Mark.